And this is according to Customs and Border Protection officials. I read this in NBC that the boy who was crying when the agents found him in the Rio Grande Valley near Brownsville, Texas, was identified only by a phone number and his name written on his shoes. The agents have taken the boy to a U.S. border station and have been trying to find his parents using the number on the shoes, but so far have been unsuccessful and are in the process of transferring the boy to the care of Health and Human Services.
There is no crisis on the border, Shay. Donald Trump made that up.
Well, it's just, it did warm my heart, though, to, like, they showed pictures of him afterwards. Like, obviously, they're not going to show a picture of, like, the dirty little boy when they find him in the desert. But they show pictures of him afterwards, like, at the Border Patrol station, like, watching DVDs on one of the computers there, which I thought was very sweet. But, yeah, it just broke my... I mean, think about the desperation involved.
We'll send someone down to get you.
In wanting... the desperation involved in wanting your child to get a chance to be in America. You know what I mean? Like, to leave a toddler in the middle of the desert and just, well, and what gets me too is that it had, like, the phone number on it, which they said, like I said, they said they weren't able to get through to the parents. Part of me thinks that, like,
I would wonder in this situation if the parents didn't meet some misfortune along the path.
I was going to say, that's what I was thinking. Whether it be a coyote, real or figurative.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it even more remarkable that this little boy survived. And God knows, I mean, even though they found him yesterday morning, like, God knows how long he was actually out there. Because, you know, a little kid in a cornfield, I think they said it was a cornfield. A little kid in a cornfield, it's not going to be super noticeable.
Right.
Not like an adult walking through a cornfield.
Yeah. But there's no crisis of the border, Shay.
Oh, no. None whatsoever.
Right? But do you remember when the Democrats on Capitol Hill were saying that Donald Trump had made up this crisis? When he was asking for funding for border protection? Do you remember when they said that?
Yes.
A few weeks ago, they said there's no crisis at the border. The one thing that I will give CNN credit for is Cuomo went down to the border. Is that Michael Cuomo? I forget what his first name is. It's whichever Cuomo kid is on CNN. He's on after Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, I think it's Michael Cuomo.
Went down to the border and actually showed people this is what's going on and called out both parties. And I give him every bit of credit for doing that.
Chris Cuomo,
thank you. I thought that was one of the best bits of journalism that I had seen out of CNN in a long time and probably the best bit of journalism I'd ever seen out of Chris Cuomo.
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing, is I remember when I first, that's amazing that he did that, because I remember when I first understood the concept of, like, it's like when you find out that your doctor isn't necessarily all-knowing when it comes to medical things.
That he's a dum-dum?
But I remember when I found out that about the news, like, I was maybe, like, 13 or 14, and I was watching, I forget what station, with my cousin, who's 15, 20 years older than me. And I forget what I said, but I was like, oh, that's such a nice story. She's like, yeah, you turn on another station, that's going to be a different version of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? The news isn't just always true?
Yeah.
And she's telling me about how during the Vietnam War, you'd have one news station with a... you know, pictures of people waving American flags and everyone looking so confident. And then you flip to another news station and it's showing all the bodies being shipped back to have American burials.
The Vietnam War is unwinnable.
I remember discovering and lamenting that concept. And that's why stories like having a reporter do something like this, saying, like, you're all dummies. This is what's actually happening.
Yeah, it was powerful.
Like, it's really impressive.
He had some footage that was shot inside one of the detention centers. He went to a rescue mission that has been helping people who have been turned loose by Department of Homeland Security, ICE, whoever it is. They basically operate a shelter. And he was talking to the woman that runs the shelter. And she said, I have never seen it this bad. We need help. And this is as the Democrats are sitting there saying, oh, Donald Trump made up this border crisis. No, he did not. We have thousands of people at a time now trying to get into the United States. We are not prepared to deal with that. No country is prepared to deal with that. And the only way that you're going to deal with that is to send a ton of resources down there to provide shelter, to provide food, to provide warmth, to process people, figure out who gets to stay and who gets to go, and then to figure out where these people are going to go once you've provisionally allowed them into the United States. Now, I thought Trump scored a nice little political point when he suggested sending them to sanctuary cities. And everybody who lived in the sanctuary cities started jumping up and down and saying, no, you can't send them here. Understand that the reason Donald Trump is doing that, number one, is to weaponize it politically. I'm not going to argue that that's what he's doing there. But at the same time, it is his problem. The White House and the federal agencies the White House runs are the ones that have to figure out where these people are going to go. And they have to prioritize that. They have to say, we're going to send 50 to San Francisco and 50 to Dallas and 50 to Somerville and 50 to Chicago or 1,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So in sitting there and figuring out, well, how are we going to prioritize this? President Trump is like, let's put the sanctuary cities at the top of the list. They said they wanted these people.
Yeah.
And what do you get? Everybody in the sanctuary cities is saying, no, you can't send them here. Why not? Aren't you an open community? Welcome to all. Haven't you been putting up hate has no home here and diversity now signs all over the place and saying we welcome immigrants? Where are you now that we need you?
Well, that's the thing is at the end of the day, people, you know how liberals can get.
Yeah.
But like people, there's a quote from Dazed and Confused that I use very often, which is, don't let your mouth write a check that your butt can't cash. So like it was really easy for everyone to be like, no, of course our doors and arms are open and da 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 da. But once it actually comes down to, okay, well, so you want that to be the solution? All right, we'll have that be the solution.
There's 10,000 migrants.
Then it's like, no, wait. I was just saying, I think it should be that way. It's like, that's the thing is, regardless of your political stance or your stance on this issue in particular, the bottom line is there really isn't a good solution. Like, there's really not a solution that's going to end with everybody skipping around happy.
Well, I have advocated for mining, creating a no man's land and mining the border as a way of stopping them from coming into the United States.
What, you mean just making like a giant pit?
Yeah, no, landmines.
Oh.
That does not go over well. I don't think we're ready.
I don't think we're quite.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because here's
I don't think that's going to happen.
Here's the problem. We are a kind nation. We are a compassionate nation. And no, I don't want to mine the border either. That's a joke. But we have to figure out some way forward with this. Because we are experiencing record migration right now. This is record migration coming to the United States.
Which is ironic considering, you know, considering the fact that there are so many people that are so staunchly against it.
You want to weigh in?
A lot of people who based voting for Trump on being against anyone else emigrating here. Is that Chris?
Yes.
Hi, yep. Chris.
Hi, Shane.
Chris, how are you doing tonight? What's your thought on let me frame this first of all.
Let me paint you a little picture.
I think any Democrat that said Donald Trump made up this border crisis should be removed from office. That's my position. Because if you are either unaware of what's going on at the border or don't care or think it's good politics, you are a monster and you got to go. I don't have much more support for the Republicans on this.
It's politicking on both sides.
There is.
The crisis at the border has been there for decades.
Oh, yeah.
People have been dying from smugglers and from the desert. But the real crisis is in the Central American countries.
Well,
that's why the people are fleeing.
Yeah,
I would say it's all like an upward motion, basically.
But it's
because those countries have been overrun by Los Angeles gang members from MS-13 who were sent back there when they should have been put in prison for the rest of their life and not sent back there. They took over the countries and they've all got machine guns and they're raping and killing, especially the children. If you're a parent down there, you can have your child raped or killed and you can send them to the United States.
So here's a solution that I would put on the table. Why don't we send our military down there to clean out MS-13 and make these countries habitable again?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Because that...
And also, all that stuff that goes back to, remember, you know, a long time ago, if you look up the history of what happened in the Reagan administration, when they tried to set up democratic governments that weren't run by banana companies and mining companies, you know, then all of a sudden you had all these death squads go down there and kill everybody. And
right.
That also, it goes back to that, too.
Yeah. And it, as I recall, it only took a couple of years for all of those democratic governments to turn staunchly socialist. And that was the end of that little experiment.
Well, yeah, when you have, it's the classic thing that's happened all over the world with all that old Cold War stuff, where when you have the U.S. government siding with all these corporations that have gotten bigger and worse and setting up all these basic little corporate dictatorships and all this colonial exploitation stuff, then all those countries are forced to turn to the U.S.'s enemy, which is then the Soviet Union, to get help. And then, of course, they have their own agenda. And then they set up their own socialist dictatorship, which isn't even really socialism. It's dictatorshipism.
Yeah.
So you have a disaster. And it happens, you know, Vietnam was a great example of that. All these other countries is a great example of that. And one of the worst outcomes was Afghanistan, when the U.S. decided, instead of fighting the Soviet Union directly, they would have a cowardly proxy fight, funnel the money, which made no sense at all, through the Pakistani military religious dictatorship, who then created the Taliban, who took over Afghanistan and were raping and killing for years, and nobody did anything about it until Bush Jr. came along and tried to do something about it, but his military people were completely incompetent. It would have been better to let the Soviet Union take over Afghanistan.
There's one other
I have friends who grew up in the old Soviet Union toward the end when it fell, and then, you know, then they came to this country and they're now citizens. And one of them, Svetlana, has a finance degree from Russia and had 3 years of a law degree. She's brilliant. She's really smart. She talks about how great the education was. You know, nobody liked the dictatorship. And even after it fell, they came to the U.S. But still, if you look at how the Taliban treated everybody versus how the Soviet Union treated people, I mean, it was bad, but the Taliban was 1,000 times worse.
Right.
So the U.S. didn't do any good by doing that. It would have been better to just let the Soviet Union have it. It would be better to let them have it today if it would get rid of the Taliban.
There's one other aspect of this that I'm sure you know, where we funded the Mujahideen, and we basically said, come on in, everybody fight. And then at the end of the war, we just said, okay, have a nice life. And the people who came discovered back in their home countries, they couldn't get back in because they had violated Islamic law by going and taking part in a war on behalf of a foreign nation.
And, I didn't know that.
And that provided the seeds for people like Osama bin Laden to round up the Mujahideen and create Al-Qaeda and provided support for the Taliban, because all of a sudden you had all of these young men who had been, you know, working for the U.S. government and basically told, hey, yeah, you know, it's, you come work for us. We'll pay you. You'll have a great time. As soon as the war was over, we just walked away and left everybody in Afghanistan. And they had nowhere to go.
That's amazing, because that's the same thing that happened in Iraq when Bush Sr. gave the country back to Saddam, gave him helicopter gunships that he used to murder 1.5 million Kurdish refugees.
Yep.
He had already herded into the northwestern desert. So now all the Shia that fought alongside us and rejoiced and had no idea that the U.S. put Saddam into power, so now we're the heroes to them. And then the U.S. leaves and Saddam's like, now you're screwed. You know, and then starts killing them and raping them all. So now pretty much Saddam hates the U.S., of course. The Shia now were betrayed and hate the U.S. The Kurds, what was left, you know, weren't killed. So you got all three sides hate the U.S., and everyone wonders, like, well, why are we not successful in Iraq? Because everyone hates the U.S. in Iraq. So what, are they going to set up a government of three groups that all hate the U.S., and all don't trust the U.S., and all hate each other? No, that's not going to work. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be three separate countries.
So
Turkey doesn't want that, too bad.
If you dig into our foreign policy in the Middle East, you discover it is a horrifying nightmare that is really just about keeping the cheap oil flowing into our gas tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And not about...
Yeah, which is
not about
the story behind
human
a lot
life.
Of it.
Yeah.
Why they had that Iran-Iraq war, lowered the oil price, and it made a ton of money for the U.S. weapons companies.
Yep, made a ton of money for Dick Cheney, too. Anyway, Chris, thank you for your call.
I had to ask one more thing.
Sure.
Shay,
Yeah.
A few months ago, I was listening to the show, and you were about to say something. Someone called me and interrupted my listening to the show, but it's something that's important. You were saying something about Liz Warren said something to you or didn't like something you said or said some kind of argument. Can you remember what that was?
Huh. About Elizabeth Warren?
You were telling the story.
Yeah, she said she disagreed with you about something. It might have been something in your act, or because the call came in just as you were starting to say it, and I never got to hear what it was.
I know you were telling a story about Elizabeth Warren at the Tavern at the End of the World, and all of the young women who were in there squealing their approval.
Oh yeah,
at Elizabeth Warren. And I don't know if it was Elizabeth Warren herself that you interacted with.
I was going to say it wasn't Elizabeth Warren herself.
It was one of her fawning admirers.
One of her admirers. Yeah.
Oh. What was that story? Because I never got to hear that.
Well, we, you know, Derek and I go to this open mic at a Tavern at the End of the World after each show or after most shows. Elizabeth Warren was speaking on the TV, and they like turned it up a little, and they're all just these like 22-year-old dum-dums like looking at her like in awe and fawning.
There were a bunch of her campaign volunteers there that night.
I was gonna say that's the thing. It was I said something about her on stage. I wish I could remember what it was, but I had a mob of Warrenites after.
Oh, they were mad at you because they didn't like some joke you told.
Yeah, yeah. Which it's like, I mean, I think the one thing that I could probably agree with Elizabeth Warren on that she would back me up on is we can like and dislike whatever politicians we like without someone jumping down our throat about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I hate Donald Trump, but like, I don't attack people for saying that they love him.
Well, I it depends on, like, I met a guy recently when I was doing a delivery for my friend's store, and he's one of these old guys, but he's into radio, like old time, you know, ham radios and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I pull up, and I had the MIT station the Boston College station on in the truck, and he goes, "Oh, is that the MIT station?" I said, "No, it's the other college station." And so I was talking to him about all these radio stations. You know, he's an old guy. He loves to listen to college radio, especially the MIT station, which is a very liberal station.
Yes.
And I mentioned to him about WMFO, which he can't get in that block of Watertown because there's stuff in the way. But I said, if you put a big antenna on your roof, and then he started telling me he used to have one for his ham radio. So somewhere along the line, I think I made some remark about, you know, some of these stations making fun of Trump or something. He goes, "Oh, he's my guy." And so I just didn't say anything. I let it go by because I didn't want to have an argument with him. I'm not going to let Trump come in between me and someone who, you know, shares an interest in radio and radio engineering and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to let Trump divide people because this was a nice guy, and he's just an old guy, and he's probably kind of brainwashed and, you know, and he's a very old guy, and there's a lot of old people that maybe aren't that politically savvy. And so when people have stuff in common, I tend to focus on that.
Yeah.
Trump is not important to me.
We don't have to agree on everything in our lives. And it's good if we have people that we don't agree on things with, if we can find common ground on something else. So.
Yeah, because this guy is not a racist or anything like that, you know, and I'm very tolerant about people who have differences of opinion about economics and environment and all that, because half the time they don't even understand the issues.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're talking about on both sides, and it's like brainwashing, especially all this global warming stuff that people don't even begin to know the science about it, and it'd take a day and a half to explain it to them. You know, so there's a lot of confusion about these issues on both sides, and you have like the gun nuts, but then you have the gun control nuts, and meanwhile no one's making the school safe, and you have people running around saying that forest fires are caused by global warming, which they're not.
Correct.
And that hurricanes and floods are caused by global warming, which they're not. So the real causes of problems, which are all human caused things that something could be done about in the case of forest mismanagement and sucking all the water out of the rivers and all, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's being ignored that something could be done about. And it's not, because it's being blamed on things that don't cause it. So there's a lot of confusion, and, you know, I'm not going to get mad at people over issues like that, because it's better to be friendly and try to explain it to them But if, on the other hand, if I see somebody that's a racist or something like that, I'm going to tell them where they can go.
Oh, yeah. We and will I'm call them out all day.
Very unwelcome.
Chris, that's all.
You know, I'm a big guy, and they're going to be scared, and they're going to run because they think it's safe to say that around white guys, and it's not around
no,
me.
Not so around
it all depends on
me
what
either.
Issue we're talking about.
Chris, we got to move on. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Always
you're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Keep listening. Frustration, Shea Spillane.
Yes.
This is from Associated Press, and this is related to the topic that we were just discussing. Frustration grows among migrants in Mexico as support fades. Madison Mendoza, her feet aching and her face burned by the sun, wept as she said she had nothing to feed her two-year-old son, who she'd brought with her on the long trek toward the United States. Mendoza, 22, said an aunt in Honduras had convinced her to join the migrant caravan, which she did 2 weeks ago in the capital of Tegucigalpa. Wow. The aunt said she'd have no problems, that people along the route in Mexico would help as they did for a large caravan that moved through the area in October. But this time, the help did not come. The outpouring of aid that once greeted Central American migrants as they trekked in caravans through southern Mexico has been drying up. Hungrier, advancing slowly or not at all, and hounded by unhelpful local officials. Frustration is growing among the 5,000 to 8,000 migrants in the southern state of Chiapas. Oof. 5 to 8,000 people are on their way to our border. Members of the caravan in October received food and shelter from town governments, churches, and passersby. Drivers of trucks stopped to give them a lift. Little of that is happening this time, and local officials who once gave them temporary permits to work in Mexico now seem to snare them in red tape. Truckers and drivers have been told they will be fined if caught transporting migrants without proper documentation. Some 1,300 migrants spend the night in Escuelinta, and we're heading north to the town of Mapastrapac, Chiapas. Mendoza and Jose arrived in Mapastrapac on Saturday.
This is a tough word to say.
It is. They joined thousands of stranded migrants waiting to see if local authorities provide them with a temporary permit or visa to work in Mexico, or whether they would continue their trip to the U.S. border. So we got another one of these caravans coming. And now in Mexico, and this is partly because the United States government has said, hey, you got to do something about this. Like, we will shut down. The president said we will shut down the border if these caravans keep coming. But part of it, too, and AP touches on this, Mexico is under pressure from the Trump administration to thwart them from reaching the U.S. border. In April, President Donald Trump threatened to close the U.S.-Mexico border before changing course and threatening tariffs on automobiles produced in Mexico if that country does not stop the flow of Central American migrants. U.S. border facilities have been overwhelmed by the number of migrant families. U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced recently that 53,000 parents and children, 53,000, that is more than the population of Medford, 53,000 parents and children were apprehended at the border in March.
That's insane.
53,000 in a month. So you do the math on that, and you are going to have somewhere in the vicinity of 750,000 people attempting to cross our southern border before the end of this year.
Before the end of the year.
Apparently, they another story that I read goes into this. There is a lot of social media chatter that is basically telling, because the migrants, apparently, because they are not getting support along the caravan, there have been incidents where people have been angry. People have been stealing. People have been getting into confrontations. And it is just making the people who live along these caravan routes much less inclined to help the people coming north. The first one, the one that happened last October, was a first of its kind. This was supposed to be a once-in-a-lifetime moment. Now it's become a regular thing.
And people are getting rest. Well, of course, the thing is, too, it's a vicious cycle, because the less help you get at the beginning when you were expecting it, the more desperate you get for the help.
Right.
Which then makes you do the things that someone does when they're desperate for something. which then makes people even more reluctant to help. Like you said, like stealing or threatening or what have you.
We cannot handle 53,000 people showing up at the border.
No, we cannot.
Per month. We don't have anywhere for them to go.
We're already incredibly overpopulated.
There is no process in place that would allow you to safely bring 53,000 people into this country. So what you have now, as the president has said, is a perfect environment for drug traffickers, a perfect environment for human traffickers, a perfect environment for criminals trying to escape those countries, a perfect environment for people who seek to do us harm to get into this country. 3-year-olds being found in the middle of a cornfield. There are dead bodies turning up all over the place. This is what's going on because these caravans keep coming and we have no way of handling this. And we have no, you can't stop people from moving.
Yeah.
You can't stop people from saying, you know what, I'm going to try and go up there. You can stop them when they get here, but then they're in Mexico with no place to go. Mexico does not want them. They get a much more hostile reception in Mexico overall than they do in the United States overall.
Yeah.
So they're going to try and get in here. We have to address this. And if we cannot address it within the United States of America, then maybe we need to address it at the source. Maybe we need to start looking at why are all these people coming up here?
Yeah, what is causing all of these people? Because it can't. I mean, I know like my family, probably your family, came for the whole like better life thing.
Yeah.
But this was back when, you know, this was 100 years ago. But like my family came because we were starving. And it can't just be a better life.
And we
built, like they can't.
Right.
Nobody backpacks for 2 weeks on foot just because they want a better life.
We built the largest processing center in human history at Ellis Island to deal with the influx of migrants coming to the United States. And we figured out how to do that. And they were able to process something like 1,500 a day through Ellis Island. And they were able to separate everybody out. People that had health concerns could go over here, and people that had criminal concerns could go over here, and people who were, you know, everything looked good, it could just be passed through. They turned it into a very smoothly run operation, and they got everybody into the country. They weren't dealing with numbers this big. Ellis Island was dealing with 45,000 a month at most.
Yeah.
53,000 in the month of March. In a part of the country where we have next to no infrastructure. There's no big cities down along
That's
the border.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it's like they cross the border and guess what? You're still in the freaking desert.
Yeah.
For the most part. Which is crazy. Have you ever actually looked at the... have you ever actually looked at a Google Earth image of the border of Mexico and the United States?
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like... Buildings, like traffic, da, 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 da. And you can tell where the United States starts because it's just desert.
Yeah.
And like, that's it for miles. And I mean, I'm here to tell you, I've driven down the length of California. It's pretty big.
Yeah. There's about
I can't imagine walking that distance.
There's about a 4-mile no man's land that exists.
Yeah.
In most areas, not all.
I would say like Brownsville, on which side do you mean?
On both sides.
On
like,
both sides.
Like Tijuana, the development goes right up to the edge.
Oh, yeah, it goes right.
Sides.
I was going to say it goes right up.
Because that's a huge border crossing. But in most places...
what do they call it? Calexico is on the other side.
In most places, there's like a 4-mile... There's like 2 miles on either side of the border fence.
Yeah.
That no
of
one
just
is...
like nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing there. Or maybe there's like a little tiny community somewhere near there, but it's mostly nothing. Chris was right and brought up the point of the gang members that we sent back to South America who are now running a lot of those countries.
Should have been in jail. Yeah.
Yeah, who are now running a lot of those countries and creating this problem.
Yeah, that was a really good point, Chris.
So these are our refugees to deal with, but we don't have the ability to deal with them. So rather than having everyone in Honduras and Venezuela come to the United States, maybe we ought to go down there with our military and clear out these drug dealers. I don't understand why we can't do that. I don't understand why we can't clear out the cartels in Mexico. Seems to me that's the sort of thing we used to be good at years ago.
I was going to say, and it's like, I mean, ultimately the same, if not less, logistical effort than building a wall or electric, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's a solution that it's like, okay, we don't have room for them. Well, how can we fix this in a more permanent way? Oh, make it so the place that there already is room for them is a better place to live.
Yeah.
And that they won't fear for their life walking down the street.
Maybe we need to put our troops on the border of Honduras.
Yeah.
And prevent people from leaving the country. If they're planning on coming to the United States, maybe we need to send our troops down to intercept these caravans and turn them back. Because by the time the people get here, the logistics of taking them home are impossible. And, if you intercept them...
And the logistics of doing anything else for them are pretty impossible too. Like, you read the story about the mother with her child. Okay, so you hear a mother and a starving child, you want to feed them. Multiply that by 25,000.
Yeah.
That's a little more difficult to toss them a granola bar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's this is the problem that we're up against. This is the imaginary crisis that Donald Trump created, that the Democrats were trying to talk about a couple of months ago. It's real. And it is going to take some sort of extraordinary leadership to put a stop to this. Because as long as people think they can keep walking their way into the United States, they're going to keep doing it. And we're going to find ourselves in the same situation that Europe was in, where suddenly you got 5 million people walking around with no plan for what to do with them. And if you think the United States is in a position to deal with that, you're incorrect. Okay? Go take a look at what's happening in San Francisco. Go take a look at what's happening in Seattle. Go take a look at what's happening in Los Angeles, where homelessness and drug addiction are destroying communities. Go take a look at what's happening in the Midwest of the United States, where drug addiction is destroying communities. We have very, very real problems in this country that are not going to be solved and are not going to be helped by another 5 million people walking in.
Yeah, true.
And it's not, I understand we are a compassionate nation. We are a kind nation. We want to help. We can't help them here. We may need to help them back home. And we may need to do something drastic to help them back home. I would support military action going down into Honduras to clean out MS-13. Go take the special forces and let's go to town on them. You're an MS-13 member, you're gone. We are not going to stop until they are all dead or in jail. And then the people can come back and have their country back. But right now, drug gangs are running that country. And they are drug gangs that we created. And we are dealing with the fallout from that, because now every decent person who lives there is coming here and saying, we want to live with you guys because you filled our country with drug dealers. Those are our refugees. Yeah. Those are our refugees. And as such, we are on limited ground when it comes to turning them around and telling them to go home. If you are responsible for the refugees, you have to let them into your country. So what are we going to do with 5 million people? That's where we're heading.
How is mix up? Sports next?
You can go anywhere you want. You can go sports, you can go entertainment.
My entertainment is actually sports related.
It's not the craft video.
Look at that. No. So those of you who listen, I'm sure I mentioned on the show before, one of my favorite couples in Hollywood is Chrissy Teigen and John Legend. I just think they're awesome. Like, they're like, just not even like that they're what?
No, just cause
I think John Legend incredibly talented, and obviously Chrissy Teigen's gorgeous, but just their personalities and like their senses of humor. Like, if you follow them like in interviews and stuff, like they just seem like really cool, pleasant people.
I love John Legend, talented guy.
But so for those of you, I don't know who did or did not watch Dwayne Wade's final home game in Miami. It was earlier this month. But it was Miami Heat versus Philadelphia 76ers. I can never say that word. But Chrissy Teigen and John Legend were sitting courtside, as they typically do. And in a moment that was actually caught on camera, Dwayne Wade fell on top of them. Like, fell like hardcore on top of them. And the expressions are great because you can see them from like either side of his ginormous body. Just like, oh my God. But so today, I follow Chrissy Teigen on Instagram, and she posted today to reveal that someone had sent her and her husband quote unquote, this giant work of art that is a blown up picture of the that exact moment that is almost the same width as their piano. Wade quickly reacted to the gift by commenting with a bunch of emojis, while Tess Holliday said what most fans were probably thinking, glad they framed it because it's definitely art. But yeah, look, this, just type in Chrissy Teigen, John Legend, Dwayne Wade, it should come right up, but it's really funny. And that's like, I like sharing stories like that because it's like, you know, a lot of celebrities are jerks, but they like, they have a sense of humor about themselves. That's what I've always really liked about them.
And he's super talented.
Oh, he's incredibly talented.
So, she's a model, isn't she?
Yeah, she's her mother. I was going to say, she's a model that she does more like, she does more like hosting type stuff now. Like she hosts the lip sync contest on MTV.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like she's one of the hosts of that.
Epic lip sync battle or whatever the heck that thing is. Yeah. But I do like that John Legend.
Yeah, he's a good egg.
On a related sort of side note, the Bruins fans out there will be on this. Fans who watched Game 6, this is from Boston.com. Fans who watched Game 6 of the Bruins Maple Leafs playoff series Sunday probably found themselves yelling "head move" at their screens during a certain stretch in the third period. Some of the more frenetic late moments of NBC Sports broadcast of the Bruins 4-2 victory were obscured by a fan's head blocking the network's camera. Reached for comment Monday morning, an NBC Sports spokesman said the camera that was partially blocked by the fan's noggin was not the usual one the network uses in that situation. Quote, "technical difficulties prevented us from using the main game camera for a period of time toward the end of the game. The replacement camera had a slightly different perspective." The spokesman didn't say whether someone from the network tried to get the fan to move, but he clearly couldn't hear you yelling from your living room. So the shot, like the guy's head is just, I don't know if he's standing or he's tall or whatever it is, but his head, like on the screen, is about 2 inches away from the net. So you can't see anything. It's going, and it's like, if you're sitting there watching it, the first thought that goes through your head is like, down in front. They need a button on your remote when this happens that allows you to remotely throw beer cans at the guy's head in the hope that he will sit down or go away. Because that's what everybody at home is thinking. It's like, if I'm there, I'm hucking empties. Kind of a bad look for NBC Sports. Remember, folks, that's the regional network. They're not the big NBC. Okay, which one of these am I going to go with? In entertainment news, Disney heiress. This is from the New York Times. Disney heiress. I guess that makes her a Disney princess. Disney heiress escalates attack on company's pay practices. The heiress Abigail Disney made headlines on Monday after she harshly criticized the company founded by her great uncle on Twitter. On Tuesday, she escalated her attack, writing in an opinion column about what she called the, quote, naked indecency of the company's pay practices. Miss Disney's column, which carried the headline, "It's time to call out my family's company and anyone else rich off their workers' backs," was published by the Washington Post. In it, she excoriated the Walt Disney Company for awarding its chief executive, Robert A. Iger, a pay package in 2018 worth $65 million. She also cited a union-sponsored study showing that the package was 1,400 times that of the median Disney worker, and called for Disney to reward all your workers fairly. Mr. Iger's pay was made up of $39.3 million in annual compensation, with restricted stock awards tied to the acquisition of 21st Century Fox assets making up the balance. Disney aggressively disputed Miss Disney's assertions. Quote, "Disney has made historic investments to expand the earning potential and upward mobility of our workers, implementing a starting hourly wage of $15 an hour at Disneyland. That's double the federal minimum wage." It added that the company had committed up to $150 million for an education initiative that gives hourly employees the opportunity to obtain a college or vocational degree at no cost. The company statement noted that 90% of Mr. Iger's compensation was based on financial performance, and that under Mr. Iger's watch, Disney's stock price had risen to $133 a share from $24, which directly benefits the literally thousands of employees who hold our stock. Ms. Disney posted several tweet storms on Sunday in which she fulminated about Disney's rock-bottom wages for entry-level workers and called Mr. Iger's pay insane. Now, somewhere in all of this, she pointed out some examples. There are Disney employees who sleep in their cars because they can't afford any place to live. There are Disney employees who can't afford medication that they need or food. They have to make a choice because of how they're paid. And here we have Bob Iger taking home $69 million in 2018.
Jesus.
Abigail Disney is correct. If you consider that Disney is a company that exists to either create entertainment or benefit its employees, it is not. It is neither of those things. And Disney's statement says it all. Okay. First, you have the, well, we pay $15 an hour. That's double the minimum wage. That may fly in Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. I think if you're making $15 an hour in Florida, you're like part of the 1%. In California, $15 an hour, and you're like, you're getting state benefits on top of that. You can't buy gas for $15 an hour in Florida. We've committed $150 million for education. When are the people making $15 an hour going to have time to go to school?
I was just going to say, they have to work too much to make it possible.
They're either working 60 hours a week for you to make ends meet, or they're working a second job to make ends meet. So I don't want to hear about your free college. That's garbage. They make it, I don't know how that program works, but when companies tout these things, usually those programs are very difficult to take part in. Only a few people, the $150 million that's been pledged will never actually be spent. And then you get to the most important quote in all of this. This is the only line that matters. This is the only thing you need to know about Disney. This is why you should not support Disney. You should not expose your family to Disney. You should have as little to do with Disney as possible. Under Mr. Iger's watch, this is the most important line. This is the most important thing in the whole thing. Under Mr. Iger's watch, Disney's stock price had risen to $133 a share from $24. That's what Disney is. Disney exists to make money for speculators on Wall Street. That's all it is. It is not an entertainment company. It is not a toy company. It is not a theme park company. It is not a musical company. It is not a creative company. It is a wealth generating engine for Wall Street investors. That is all this company cares about. Their employees can all go die. That may be extreme. Let me walk that back. The reason that Bob Iger gets the money and the employees don't is because if you gave the employees a raise, you wouldn't make as much profit.
Yeah.
And if you don't make as much profit, your stock value doesn't go up as much. And if your stock value doesn't go up as much, the investors aren't happy. Whatever Disney may have been in a previous life, in its existence as a company, is done.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's over. Disney is a money-generating machine. And part of the way that you become a money-generating machine is you eliminate as many employees as you possibly can, and you pay the remaining employees as little as you possibly can. And the people who sit at the top of this and make all of that happen sit there and they say, you know what? Part of the reason the investors like this company so much is because I'm Bob Iger, because I'm here, because I'm making these deals.
It's specific group of people that he has to keep happy. And as long as he keeps them happy, screw everybody else.
I can go somewhere else. And if he walks out the door, the stock price falls by 20 to 40%. This is what Disney is now.
Ay, ay, ay.
This is all they are. This is all they care about. Is Wall Street happy? Are the shareholders happy? Abigail Disney may as well be screaming into a hurricane because no one in that corporation gives a damn about what she has to say. They're not interested in fairness. They're not interested in compensating their employees. They're not interested in doing anything that is going to add another penny of cost to anything that they do because Wall Street will punish them for that. And Disney exists now solely to serve Wall Street. That's it.
It's a sad time we're living in, Derek.
I'm going to see the Avengers movie tomorrow night. because
hypocrite.
Because that at least I know will be good because they started making that last year. No, that at least will be good. After that, after Avengers, Disney and I are probably going to be on an extended hiatus. I have to go see the Star Wars movie because my friends are dragging me to it. But other than those two franchises, Disney is not getting any of my money. They don't put out original movies anymore. Everything is a sequel or based
or remake
or live action remake or based on something that they did years ago. So there's nothing new to see here. There is just highly formulaic processed film entertainment and highly formulaic toy lines.
Yeah.
Like everything exists according to a template that allows them to create the content as cheaply as possible and make the most possible money off of it. So they think. That keeps Wall Street happy. That's why Bob Iger gets paid what he does. And the thing that drives me nuts is when I see all these people walking around like, I love Disney. Disney, happy life. Disney's the best. Disney's. Do you understand what Disney actually is? Do you understand that you are little more than a Scientology member propping up the glories of Scientology as they rob you blind? As they exploit you, as they find ever new and exciting ways to extract money from your wallet while selling you the illusion of happiness. Some people are so far gone into it that you're never going to convince them otherwise.
Yeah.
But for the people, there are a lot of people who are in the middle who are like, Disney's not all bad. And it's like, we're kind of past that now. We're kind of through the looking glass with the Disney Corporation. Yeah.
Yeah.
They are that bad now. They are that bad because it's all about Wall Street.
I was going to say, I'd say probably around the 90s is where things
It's been a little more recent than that. The Fox acquisition is the point where it really changes.
Where its soul was really sold.
That's where it really shifts. And you know what? Disney, by sheer accident or by virtue of a million monkeys working at a million typewriters, eventually, probably, you know, in terms of probability, creating the works of Shakespeare, Disney will create some good content every now and again. You can't have that many people working on stuff and not
especially you can have that many creative people working on stuff and not have something great churned out every once in a while.
But that's not the goal. The goal is to produce what makes money. And the goal is to produce what makes money as cheaply as possible. Because that's what our shareholders want. And that's who Disney serves. Not the audience, not the fans, not the kids, not the theme park guests. Wall Street. Sad. They're not the only company that operates like this.
Oh, no, they are not.
By the way, but they are.
So I talk about all the time how one of my least favorite classes in college was media industries, where I learned how terrible pretty much every company is.
Yeah, it's horrifying. And I hate to see it happen because as Disney goes, so goes a lot of the rest of Hollywood. Because everyone's sitting there competing for that big box office. And Disney is in charge right now. So as long as they're steering the ship, everybody else is sitting around, Warner Brothers is sitting around being like, make more movies like the ones they make. Mm. Paramount's like, make more like what they're doing. Do more of that stuff before we get bought out by them. 855-915-9636. Hey, here's something exciting.
Yes.
On the tell, Mikey D, coming your way about 11 minutes. 11 and a half minutes. But before that, not chronologically before that, but I'm going to talk about
before
this.
Before that, he's going to talk about a thing that's happening later.
By the way, I have to know that look behind you, Chase Blaine.
Mm-hmm.
What is, there is a paper bag pinned to the bulletin board.
It says, Happy Easter, Music Savage.
Okay. Do we know what is in? Does it feel like eggs?
Does feel like it.
I hope they're not hard boiled, is all I'm going to say. And and if they are, I'm glad we're here on Wednesday because that's not going to get any better.
No. I can feel the seam. They're plastic.
Okay.
All right. I just felt someone's bag.
So if you are a fan of On the Tell Mikey D, if you are a fan of local music, and gosh darn it, you should be.
I was going to say, as one should be.
You should support local music. How's your friend doing?
She's doing well. She's still out in LA for the moment.
Still doing the Voice.
Still doing the Voice.
She getting votes? Is she getting all the votes? Is she getting the most votes?
Better believe it. Or at least she did her last round. So everybody, yeah, stay tuned for the next round that Kim Cherry's on. Get the Voice app so that you can vote for her 10 times.
We're going to be super disappointed if you don't vote for Kim Cherry and support local music.
Local music, baby.
Now, another way that you can celebrate local music, it is the 30th anniversary of On the Town with Mikey D. Can you believe 30 years? Shay's not even 30 years old.
Yeah.
It is the 30th anniversary. No, you're 27. It's the 30th anniversary of On the Town with Mikey D. 1989 was when that show first went on the air. And WMFO is going to celebrate 30 years of Mikey D at Sally O'Brien's, one of my favorite establishments.
Oh, yeah.
335 Somerville Avenue. That is in Union Square. Somerville. I am in there every Monday night during football season. It is a fabulous venue.
Really good food.
Thursday and Friday.
And good beer.
May 2nd and 3rd. Two nights of shows. Starts at 7 p.m. on May 2nd with acoustic performances by John Pauhita, Aaron Perino from the Sheila Devine, and then full band performances by Eyewitness, Lily Black, who's going to be playing at the live thing here on WMFO, Lily Black live at Sally O'Brien's, and the Weistronauts. This is huge. If you've been in the Boston music scene for a little while, at midnight on May 2nd, Permafrost.
Oh, Permafrost is dope.
Is having a reunion at Sally O'Brien's.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, you do not want to miss that.
And that is a mere $15 to get into that. Friday, May 3rd, music starts at 9:30. The Barneys are going to be having a reunion set. No Hugs at 10:30 and the Lights Out at 11:30. $10 at the door. There will be cake. There will be cake.
There will be cake.
The cake is not a lie. That is Sally O'Brien's May 2nd, May 3rd, celebrating 30 years of On the Town with Mikey D. Gosh darn it, it seems like only yesterday that show was just toddling around here saying, you know, I like local music. And now, 30 years later, they're old enough to drive, they're old enough to drink, they're old enough to host their own show at Sally O'Brien's. Go check it out. When we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
This is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture, but first we're going to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. For me, this is something that's apparently been going on for a couple years, but I didn't know about it and read about it, wanted to share it with you. So Governor Baker helped plant 3 new trees at North Quincy High School yesterday afternoon, which is part of his administration's initiative. This is what I didn't know about, to plant 10,000 trees per year in cities across the state. The three new sugar gum samplings are now part of the landscapes of the school's front lawn. And the plantings bring the Greening the Gateway Cities program, which launched in 2017, to over 20,000 trees planted so far. And the program aims to increase tree canopy by 5% in selected urban neighborhoods. And in addition to Quincy, 13 cities have taken part in the program, including Brockton. And the trees are planted by the state state's Department of Conservation and Recreation, and then also local forestry crews as employed by the government. And I think, like, you know, so often we talk about initiatives that are kind of a pain. It's like, I want to talk about improving our environment. He's just making more oxygen all over the place in urban areas. I couldn't believe that I hadn't heard of it, and it's been going on for 2 years. But I mean, I just thought it was such a, like, way to go, Gov. I thought it was a very nice, nice idea.
I like trees.
Yeah, me too.
Anybody who's in favor of planting trees, I'm on board with this. Yeah, totally. More of that. NSMT.org, www.nsmt.org. Go there now, because would you like to support cancer research? Yes, you would. Would you like to support cancer research at one of the most innovative centers in the city of Boston, the Tamir Center at Mass General? Yes, you would. Now, what would be better than supporting cancer research at the Tamir Center at Boston or at Mass General Hospital than getting a free show to go along with it? That's the way you want to look at Titanic the Musical at the North Shore Music Theater, May 4th and 5th. Yes, I will be in it. Yours truly will be singing. I'm part of the show. That is Saturday night at 7:30. That is Sunday, I believe, at 1 in the afternoon. So that's a matinee. Two performances to choose from. New seats have been added. This thing is selling like hotcakes. If you want to go, get tickets now because it is selling out. That is nsmt.org. Do not go anyplace else to buy tickets to Titanic. NSMT.org, that is Voices of Hope, spring production of Titanic. It is going to be amazing, and you are going to do a world of good in cancer research and get a free show out of the deal. It's not bad.
Yeah.
That's the way to think of it. Your ticket price is helping find a cure for cancer. The show, that's just some fun that you get to go along with it.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at the Big Picture, but before we go, we're going to tell you that's the thing that happened, which is the weirdest news story we could find from the last week. For me, staying out of Florida tonight, kicking it over to Arkansas.
Arkansas? Well, that's like Florida North.
Yeah, it's like Florida of the Central South. An Arkansas nurse and Sunday school teacher was sentenced to 16 years in prison yesterday for murdering her husband after discovering he had paid for porn. Patricia Hill, a nurse of 50 years, shot and killed her husband, Frank Hill, 65, in a shed outside their Pine Bluff home last July after the two argued about his pornography use. Her attorney told NBC that the couple had been married for 17 years and she, quote, kept finding pornography stashed and hidden. James said the attorney said Frank Hill would often watch pornography in the shed, describing it as his man cave. Patricia Hill, a religious woman who taught Sunday school, felt like the devil was in that shed. She filed for divorce in May 2018, but she withdrew after he begged her to reconsider. And then 2 months later, she discovered that her husband had purchased a pornography channel on their TV.
Wow.
Yeah. She confronted him. She said she didn't mean to kill her husband. She first shot him in the leg and then fired a warning shot and slipped and ended up striking him in the head.
Yikes.
She said she doesn't even remember getting the gun. She immediately called police. This is what I love. On the 911 call, Hill said, "I need police and ambulance. My husband's been shot." The dispatcher asked, "Who shot him, ma'am?" She goes, "Oh, I did." She was originally charged with capital murder, but ended up being found guilty of second degree.
Yeah, I think that's more a crime of passion than premeditated. Yikes. Some people just don't like porn.
I'd say hide your cable bill if you're married to a religious person.
Kenya, sometimes you just need to watch sports. That was the attitude of police in Nairobi, who shut down their police post in Kanawan to go watch the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals at a nearby mall. While they enjoyed the game, thieves noticed the empty police station, broke in, and helped themselves to three rifles and ammunition. Police are now looking for the thieves, who are advised to only go out when football is on TV.
Oh, my God.
Not a good look.
Obviously. Yeah, like, not good look.
You know what? No police tonight. There's football. What? Wait, what?
That probably won't cause any problems.
I would imagine there's probably very little crime in that situation because everybody is watching football except the thieves.
I was going to say, so like, that's...
Wait, look. There's guns in there.
I mean, it's just like there's an episode of some... it was an episode of Daria where they schedule a meeting to pass some school law on the day of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's like, no one's going to come. Super Bowl's playing.
I remember that. I did watch Daria on occasion. I should not admit to that.
Are you kidding? Daria is dope.
That is all the time that we have for this week. No show next week. We're not going to be here next week because I am going to be rehearsing for Titanic. Oh. So please, nsmt.org. Tickets are available. Please come see this. This is a great...